consider Inyana Dioma, and as this Wednesday is Yom Yerushalayim, we're going to talk a little bit about Yom Yerushalayim. And we'll talk both about some of the halachic aspects of Yerushalayim as a city and unique dinim that apply to it, as well as at the beginning and at the end, some divrei hashkafa. It's very interesting to note that we say Imashkachech Yerushalayim, or David HaMelech says Imashkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. We don't find that, and I Rabbi Penner happened to mention this to some of you, heard him maybe, okay? So he mentioned this to me today. We don't find anything else about anything else that we have such a lashon. Even Imashkachech Eretz Yisrael, we don't say. There's something about Yerushalayim per se which seems to be more important to us than anything else. And the question is, what is it? Yerushalayim is obviously a city. It's a very important city. What specifically is it? I heard also, in preparing for this year, I thought I would listen to some other shiurim on Yom Yerushalayim. And I heard one from Rav Weinberger. He, in that same capital of Tehillim, Al Haros Bavel, notes that the pasuk says, Eich nashir ashir Hashem al admas nechar. How can I sing the song of Hashem al admas nechar? Now, the simple understanding of this is it's referring to the Levium. The Levium were exiled. They were on the rivers of Babylon. Their captors told them, Shiru lanu mashir Tzion, sing us from the songs of Tzion, the songs of Yerushalayim. To which they responded, we can't. Eich nashir ashir Hashem al admas nechar. We can't do it. We can't do it. The Medrash understands not just that we can't do it, but we refuse to do it. The Medrash says that they bit off their finger so as not to be able to play the instruments, which is in and of itself a remarkable thing, whether it means it literally or not. That's the extent to which they saw it as inconceivable to sing the songs of the Beis HaMikdash al admas nechar, in foreign territory. But the way Rabbi Weinberger interpreted it is that we can't express ourselves on foreign soil. We can't truly be ourselves. Well, what does that mean? Not myself. And again, here too, we could take it on a more simple level. The Meiri explains in interpreting the Gemara. The Gemara says, better to live in a city in Eretz Yisrael, where it is majority Akum, majority idolaters, as opposed to a city in Chutz Laaretz, even if it's majority Yisrael. And he says, why is it? Why is that? And he says, because when we're at home, we feel free to be ourselves. When we're elsewhere, when we're in a foreign land, even if we're the majority, we're constricted. But again, I don't think that just that quite captures it, because that's not the Eich Nafshir or Shir Hashem. There's something else. There's something more fundamental. There's something more basic, and not just about Eretz Yisrael, but specifically about Yerushalayim. It's interesting that in Musaf, on Rosh Chodesh and on Yantif, we daven, V'havienu l'tzion irecha birina, v'liyushalayim beis mikdashcha b'simchas olam. So we daven that Hashem bring us to Tzion, the city. Note here how we refer to Tzion as a city, and liyushalayim beis mikdashcha. So that is very strange. Yerushalayim is not the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was in Yerushalayim. But here, we seem to be referring to Yerushalayim as the Mikdash. So what's the pshat? How is Yerushalayim the Beis HaMikdash? So I saw the Abu Draham, who writes a commentary on the tefillah, and he explains, what does this mean? The Abu Draham is explaining the psukim upon which the tefillah is based. Almost all of Shmona Esrei, if you are a Baki in Tanakh, you will notice, I'm not a Baki in Tanakh, but I can notice because I look at the Mefarshim who were, is very much based off of the Lashon of Psukim. So why do we say, Vavienu Letzion Ircha Berina? Because the Pasuk says, Uvau Letzion Berina, Pasuk in Yeshayahu Perek Lamed Hei. Vitzion Nikra Ir, Beharbe Mekomos. So we find in a number of places, Tzion is referred to as an ear. Okay, so that part is easy. L'Yerushalayim Ir Mikdashcha, Al Shem Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, which is a pasuk also from Yerushalayim, from Yeshayahu, Perek Nun Beis. But that's a little more of a stretch, because, of course, Yerushalayim is Ir HaKodesh. There's Kiddusha in Yerushalayim that reflects itself halachically. For example, if a person wishes to eat Kadshim Kalim, there are certain karbanos, like the Karban Shlamim, Karban Toda, the Karban Pesach, which can be eaten in all of Yerushalayim, not just in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, there's Kedusha to Yerushalayim. Maaser Sheni could be eaten in Yerushalayim, not outside of Yerushalayim. But why is it called a Beis HaMikdash? What's the significance of Yerushalayim being referred to as the Beis HaMikdash? And it's interesting also, parenthetically, that we switch them, right? Because in Birkas HaMazon, what do we say? Rachim na, right? Al Yerushalayim Irecha, the Al Tzion Mishkan Kevodecha. And in the Musaf, we have the reverse. It's Vavienu Letzion Irecha, the Yerushalayim Beis Mikdashcha. So I don't know what to do about that also. Just something I was thinking about when I encountered that we reverse it. But the basic yesod is that Yerushalayim is the Beis HaMikdash in the sense that it is the Makom HaShras HaShchina. It's the place where we can, more than anywhere else in the world, perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. That is true in the Beis HaMikdash, even more than in the rest of Yerushalayim. But it's true in Yerushalayim in a way that it's not true anywhere else in the world. And that's why Yerushalayim is called Mikdashecha. It's not the pshat that it just happens to be that you could eat kadshim in Yerushalayim. The reason why you could eat kadshim in Yerushalayim is because Yerushalayim is the makom of Hashras HaShchina. And I think that when we think about what we're missing today, we're missing that to a large degree. But also, when we think about what we have today and what we celebrate on Yom Yerushalayim, something that we didn't have for such a long time, is that we do have that today. So, of course, there is still a tremendous amount that we're missing. But on Yom Yerushalayim, we also celebrate the tremendous amount of what we've been given. And for someone to not appreciate and celebrate what they've been given because they focus on what they still lack, so that represents a lack of Hakar Satov. And while we don't, the Hashras HaShchina that we can perceive in Yerushalayim today might not be quite what we hope it will be when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, there is something of that Kedusha that we can certainly experience today. And we'll talk more about that at the end of this year. But what I wanted to talk to you about are some of the Shilos that relate to the Halachos Yerushalayim and the Kotel and Makom HaMikdash, which I think reflect this very dichotomy. on the one hand, appreciating what we have, and at the same time, awareness of what we still don't have. And sometimes people focus too much on one or on the other. They're very, very excited and they're celebrating that we have a state and that we have Yerushalayim and forget what we're still missing. Others sometimes focus too much on what we're missing and they forget it's true, it's not perfect. We wish there was a Beis HaMikdash on the Makom HaMikdash, not what's there now. But when focusing so much on what we're missing, they fail to appreciate the incredible things that we do have and the incredible nisim that took place in our getting what we have. And so I think the halachos we're going to discuss tonight reflect that dichotomy. Yehuda?
Yes, but how do you know Yerushalayim is the same thing as Tzion?
It may be or it may not be. I think we find Tzion oftentimes, and that's what the Abu Draham says, referring to Yerushalayim, but what the Abu Draham points out is that's not what it always means. However, what the Abu Draham is saying is in the context of this tefillah of Musaf, it's clear it means Yerushalayim, because what else would it mean when we say, Davienu l'tzion iracha berina? Right? So in that context, it's clear that Tzion means Yerushalayim. Okay. So the first set of halachos I wanted to talk about with you relate to Kriya on Yerushalayim and on the Mikdash, and as we'll see, these halachos reflect both the awareness of what we have and still what we're missing. And the way in which it does that is that the halacha today is not practiced as it was for several thousand years. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Avel, Kederach shekorea Adam al aviv al imo, kach chayav lekroa al rabo shelimdo Torah, v'al nasi, v'al av beisdin, v'al rov hatzibor shenarag, v'al birkas Hashem, v'al sefer Torah shenisraf, v'al are Yehuda, v'al Yerushalayim, v'al amikdash. So the Rambam tells us that even though we usually think of Kriya in terms of what a close relative does when they lose a relative, a child, for example, tears Kriya upon the death of a parent, Rahmana Litzlan, but there are other cases when we also tear Kriya. And what are they? So some of them are not very observed today, like Kriya for Rav Shelimdo Torah. Why we don't observe that is another discussion. And Nasi and Avbeisin, which we don't really have today. Rov Atzibor Shenerag, Rachmana Litzlan. Birkas Hashem, so if someone blasphemes. A Torah that's burnt. We could all understand these. And then, three additional things, which we'll talk about tonight. Number one, Are Yehuda. Number two, Yerushalayim. And number three, the Makom HaMikdash, or the Mikdash Shenachrev. Now, start with Are Yehuda, which is very interesting, because usually we don't find any particular Kedusha to Are Yehuda. Are Yehuda are special, but halachically, in terms of formal Kedusha, there doesn't seem to be anything special. We said Yerushalayim has Kedusha. You can eat Meiser Sheni and Kachim Kalim in Yerushalayim. There is no such halach, as far as I know, with respect to Are Yehuda. So why would this be? So this is the Pas HaShulchan, for example, says that it's because there's strong connection to Malchus Beis David. And therefore, perhaps then the Kriya on Are Yehuda reflects Kriya for our lack of Malchus Beis David, which we're mourning for through this Kriya. This Kriya is a form of Avelos, of course. Some answer that there are, in some ways, a higher level of Kedusha, though it's not so clear what these are. Now, what are the Are Yehuda? Anyone know what are some examples of the Are Yehuda? Come on. Sorry?
Ir David,
right outside of Yerushalayim. Okay, but I'm talking about cities. Because Are Yehuda. So Beis Lechem, Chevron, Yericho, Shechem. Chevron is actually might be a debate because it was an Ir Miklat. But so let's say Beit Lechem. Say you see Beit Lechem. So it used to be that, let's say you were to approach Yerushalayim from the south, so you would first encounter Beit Lechem, you would tear Kriya for that. Then you would see Yerushalayim, there would be Kriya, and then Makom HaMikdash, and you'd tear Kriya. If you approach Yerushalayim from the west, let's say from Tel Aviv, which is probably more common, so then you don't see any of the Arei Yehuda before you get to Yerushalayim. In which case, if you went on to the Arei Yehuda, the halacha is you only have to add on to your kara a little bit. You have to be mosif a kol shehu. You wouldn't actually have to tear a full kriya. Now, one of the interesting questions is, should we still tear kriya for Arei Yehuda, for Yerushalayim, and for the Makom HaMikdash? Why yes, and why no? So, the Arei Yehuda... well, let's say Yerushalayim. So, what do you say? Has anyone ever here ever torn Kriya for Yerushalayim? Nobody here. So that reflects the mainstream view. And that's because Yerushalayim is beautifully rebuilt. Okay, again, it's not quite what we would wish in every sense, but Yerushalayim is a beautiful city, a city full of life, a city where there is Baruch Hashem, Jewish autonomy, and as such, most posts can maintain you don't tear Kriya. What about Arei Yehuda? So Arei Yehuda is an interesting question. Anyone here ever tear Kriya over Arei Yehuda? So there are some poskim that say that we no longer need to tear Kriya over Arei Yehuda because Jewish autonomy has been restored. Post-1967, other people said, well, one second, we gave them back. We don't have autonomy anymore, and they're not really Jewish cities. I don't know how many Jews live in Beit Lechem, so Jews aren't living there. Others say, well, it's true that we're not, there's some semblance of self-governance in Beit Lechem, but at the same time, there's still overall Jewish autonomy. If we need to go in and take care of something, we're able to do that, and the like. So that is a little bit less clear. You could also argue, though, that, and some posts have argued, that Arei Yehuda should be entirely dependent upon autonomy, as opposed to Makom HaMikdash and maybe even Yerushalayim, which is tied more closely to the Beis HaMikdash. Like we said, Arei Yehuda relates to Malchus Beis David and maybe autonomy and the like. So, because of this, most poskim, in the end of the day, if we have time, I'll tell you some specific formulations of poskim and what they say and what they don't say, which is interesting, but most poskim maintain that we don't tear Kriya on Arei Yehuda anymore, so that's more of a shaila. I saw that one posek says that person should tear Kriya on Arei Yehuda now that they've been given back, quote unquote. And he said that maybe there's room to be makel here since it's not so clear to give your shirt to somebody else as a full-fledged gift and then borrow it back if you don't want to tear Kriya. But he says everybody should tear Kriya once on Arei Yehuda, real Kriya, because at least this particular posek felt that that we sort of have to instill in ourselves. This is, by the way, Rav Melamed. He says that like the tragedy of our having been given Arei Yehuda the way he perceives it, and then giving it back. So that's an interesting issue, and obviously it gets into some political questions, which certainly is not the makom for tonight's discussion. I'd like to see, that was the Rambam's formulation, Hilchos Avel. Listen to it in Hilchos Ta'anios. So, mi shira'a Arei Yehuda b'churbanam, anyone who sees Arei Yehuda in their destruction, omer, Arei kadshecha hayu midbar, your cities. Now, interesting, we understand this is a pasuk from Yeshaya Samach Dalad, that Arei Yehuda are called Arei Kadshecha, reflecting either a higher degree of Kedusha or a greater association with the Beis HaMikdash. And your Terkriya. Ra Yerushalayim b'Churbana, if you see Yerushalayim in its destruction, Omer Yerushalayim midbar v'gomer. Now, the pasuk is not clear that the Rambam is referring to, but there's a different pasuk, Tzion midbar ha'isa, Yerushalayim shemama, which is what the poskim quote, the pasuk you say when you see Yerushalayim in destruction, and then again you do Korea, Kriya. So again, both of those most people don't do. Beis HaMikdash b'Churbano, if you see the Makom HaMikdash b'Churbano. Now, at the very least, this isn't, sometimes people say, you know, you tear Kriya when you see the Kotel. So that's not precise. You're not tearing Kriya on the Kotel. You're tearing Kriya on the Makom HaMikdash, which of course does not have a Beis HaMikdash on it. Omer Beis Kachenu V'Sifartenu V'Gomer. You say the Pasuk, I'll read you the whole Pasuk. And in a second, and you tear Kriya. And these halachos, by the way, are paskind also in the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim Siman Tav Kuf Samach Aleph. And the whole pasuk is Beis Kachenu V'Sifartenu Asher Hilulucha Bo Avosenu Haya L'Sreifas Eish V'Chol Machmadenu Haya L'Charva. So that is what you say, that pasuk. And then you tear Kriya Meichan Chayv L'Kroa Minat Sofim, for that's for Ari Yehuda. When you see the Makom HaMikdash, you have to tear another Kriya. Then Pago HaMikdash Tchila. But if you see the Beis HaMikdash first, Kshiyavo Miderach HaMidbar, then Korea HaMikdash Umosif Al Yerushalayim. In other words, the Iker Kriya is really on the Makom HaMikdash. So if you see the Makom HaMikdash first, then you would be Mosif on Yerushalayim and Mosif on Ari Yehuda. Whereas if you say Ari Yehuda first, you tear Kriya for Ari Yehuda, but you're Mosif on Yerushalayim. And then the Rambam says a very interesting thing. Kol ha-karayim ha'elu, kulam biyado. So when you tear these kriyos, meaning Makom HaMikdash, Yerushalayim, Ar Yehuda, you do it with your hand, umeumad, and while standing, v'korek, kol ksus she'alav, you tear all your garments, ad she'egala eslibo, until you expose your heart. And the poskim say, doesn't necessarily include, let's say for a man, your undershirt, and obviously for a woman, it has to be done in a way that while tearing Kriya doesn't, it's not a violation of tznius. Ve'eno me'acheh kriyim elu li'olam. You may not fully repair these rips forever. Aval reshayhu l'shalalan l'malalan l'laktan u'letafran kamin sulamos. You could sort of sew it up a little bit so it's not wide open, but you can't properly repair this rip. Which means that the Rambam is telling us an amazing thing. That halacha doesn't apply for almost all kriyos you could usually repair. What does it apply to? A parent. The kriya that a person tears when losing a parent is more strict than any other kriya, even than losing a child that has this halacha can't be repaired. And the Rambam writes that the kriya we tear for the Makom HaMikdash is such a chamor kriya that it's equivalent halachically to the kriya of a parent, over the loss of a parent, which, if you think about, is saying an amazing thing about how we're supposed to see the loss of the mikdash. Not everybody agrees to this. The Raiva disagrees. Amar Avram, lo nirakein menagimara, sheharei shanu betosefta, lo hushvu la'aviv l'imo elo l'ichoy b'ovad. It's only with respect to certain things, ichoy, that it's like aviv l'imo. But you could do it with a kli as opposed to biyad, that the Rambam insists on. Kol begadim she'alav, adshigal libo lo hushbu. Sorry, what is it different? It's not adshigal libo. It doesn't have to be all your clothing. Aval sheyikra chutz le'enei ha'am, gam lezeh hushbu anasi levad. Fine. So according to the Raivit, and I think this is the more common practice, it's not. It's only like a parent in one respect, not in all respects. So that's why we paskin. Most people will only tear their shirt. They won't tear all their clothing. Let's say they're wearing a suit jacket or the like. So for a parent, they would tear their suit jacket and their shirt. For Yerushalayim, just a shirt or just a jacket, depending, and the like. Some of the other halachos, that seems to be the minhag. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam in that respect. Rav Shlomo Zalman points out that's the minhag. Some other interesting halachos. So the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam write the Chorbanan. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, Afilu Yoshvin ben Yisrael, Kevan she'ishma'elim moshlam aleihem mikri b'chorbanan. This is what we said before. It's not dependent on who lives there, but on autonomy. So he writes that even if Jews are living in, let's say, the Ari Yehuda, if they're not under Jewish hands, then you would tear Kriya. And this is a reflection of, again, something to think about in Yerushalayim, which we celebrate. The significance, the halachic significance is, of course, the historical significance of the restoration of autonomy. The Bach adds an important thing, which is, and it's quoted by the Mishnah Berurah, it's not enough to just tear Kriya. He writes that you have to be livkos, ulhis onain, ulhis abel, al forban beis hamikdash, ulakonain, ulomar mizmor la'asaf, mizmor la'asaf baigoyim benach la'asecha, a capital describing the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Ad sof, uksho koreh, mevarech baruch dayin ha'emes. The Mishnah Berurah says, without shame of malchus, so you should say baruch dayin ha'emes. In other words, we should really act. It's not just tearing kriya, but you should really act as though one is in a state of mourning and the like. This halacha, by the way, is only if you haven't seen these places for 30 days. Somebody who's born in Yerushalayim and never leaves Yerushalayim for more than 30 days and never, you know, goes to the Kotel at least every 30 days should, you know, could go through a whole life without tearing Kriya. I remember I learned in Karen Biavne, and so I didn't get to the Kotel too often. I once was talking to my cousin about this. My cousin was Baruch Weider, who lives in the Old City. He's actually he wasn't then, but now he's the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva HaKotel. And I mentioned something about, like, you know, I don't have enough shirts to tear Kriya every time I visit the Makom HaMikdash. To which he said, how could you go 30 days without seeing the Makom HaMikdash? So I think he was giving me a stark musser. You know, there are people who do try to avoid this halacha with certain kunsin and the like. You know, like I said before, the halacha is you don't have to necessarily tear kriya if the garment belongs to somebody else. Though it could be they know you're going to the Makom HaMikdash, you would anyway. Anyway, so they try to avoid this shayla. But it's not something that you should, other, you know, if you go on Shabbos, obviously you don't have to tear kriya, and we paskin that if you go on Shabbos, so then, you know, if you go back on Monday, you still don't have to tear kriya. And obviously, a person shouldn't be needlessly machmir on this. It's bal tashchis. But at the same time, it's important not to be too makel on this, because it reflects a feeling that we should have. The whole idea of kriya is to be over on bal tashchis, in a sense. Not for the sake of being wasteful, but to reflect certain emotions that we should have. And if we don't have those emotions, so then and I include myself here, I don't think that I necessarily, every time I see the Kotel, and I see the Makom HaMikdash, and I see a mosque on the Makom HaMikdash, I feel what I should be feeling. A couple years ago, I was giving a shiur in the Bialystoker Shul. So Rabbi Ram, who's the Rav there, told me that a couple of years earlier, Rav Mordechai Greenberg, Rav Mati Greenberg, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Karen Biavne, visited as well. It's a very beautiful, historic shul. And if anyone's been there, there are all these beautiful paintings on the walls of the shul, including one. These were actually painted before 48. You see there's a picture of the Kotel, with the, you know, very narrow Kotel, like it used to be, with the mosque and the Dome of the Rock in the back. And Rav Mati said, how could you have a picture of the Dome of the Rock in a shul? So that was one point, but it's another point, which is like, seeing that picture should make you cry. So you're shul on Shabbos. It's not, if a person has a sensitivity, and I think, you know, we don't, we sort of picture the Kotel. So obviously we feel bad at the Beis HaMikdash. That's sort of like our image. You know, there's the Kotel with the golden dome in the background and the like. There are a couple, there are three tshuvos that I'm aware of Rav Moshe Feinstein on Kriya, on Yerushalayim and Ar Yehuda. A lot of interesting things. I guess we're not going to have a chance to do them now. And also a tshuva Mincha Shlomo that I wanted to do with you. But we don't have time because I want to move on to some of the other shailas. There is a mysterious tshuva that I don't understand. So that one I'll mention, which is quite interesting. He writes, discussing Kriya, Uksheroen Ara Yehuda, Shehem Birshus Ha'umos, V'chein Im Ika Chelek Mirushalayim Birshus Ha'umos, Af Im Nivnu, Yafet Tzarech Lekra. If you see Ara Yehuda, which are in the Rishus of the Umos, non-Jewish control, and parts of Yerushalayim, which are under non-Jewish, even if they're built, sorry, it didn't say non-Jewish control, it says Af Chelek Mirushalayim Birshus Umos, right? Even parts of Yerushalayim that are in the control of the Umos, non-Jews, Af Im Nivnu, even if they're built beautifully, then you still have to tear Kriya. So when do you think that tshuva was written? What? Give me a guess. So I would have said before 67, right? But it says it's written dated Chavzayin Adar Tavshin Lamites. When's Tavshin Lamites? 1979. So I don't know what he means exactly. Maybe. You know, he means it's pre-Oslo, post-67, right?
It's in
the title. Oh, it could be. I doubt it. So I don't know. Maybe he means that there, in terms of the Ari Yehuda, that even though technically we have autonomy, it's not really, you know, there aren't Jewish cities, and we don't, you know, maybe act on that autonomy. And maybe in Yerushalayim he's like referring to the Muslim quarter or the like. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm not sure what he means. But as I said, there are a lot of interesting tshuvos, but I wanted to move on to some other questions beyond Kriya. So far, this like feels like a Tisha B'Av shiur. So this is some other, I guess, less depressing halachos relating to Yerushalayim. Oh, questions. Really quickly.
I heard that Rosh Chodesh on Friday also you.
It's a discussion. Rosh Chodesh, there's a strong basis for it. Friday after Chatzos, it's less clear, put it that way. Okay. Yeah, okay, good. Yes?
Where is Yerushalayim halachically today?
That's also an interesting question. But as I said, largely it's not, it sort of depends on halacha. In other words, you couldn't, you know, in terms of official Kedushas Yerushalayim, it would not include what's known as the new city. But that's not relevant because in terms of any dinim that relate to Kedushas Yerushalayim, we don't have them anymore, sadly. We're not eating Maaser Sheni or Kachem Kalim. In terms of things like when Kriyas HaMegillah and the like, so that doesn't follow, you know, Kedushas Yerushalayim. In terms of Kriya, it's not really no gaya, like we said, because we're no longer tear Kriya on Yerushalayim anyway.
But if it were,
so
yes.
Right, but I'm saying, you know, there's a different
it's
in Yerushalayim.
Like
right. I don't. I think in terms of formal Kedusha, Rechavia does not have Kedushas Yerushalayim. When B'mheira Yibana Beis HaMikdash, will they decide to extend the halachic borders of Yerushalayim? There's a process for doing that. Maybe they'll build Chomos Yerushalayim, you know, dozens of miles outward. I don't know. We'll find out soon, I hope. Okay. So I wanted to talk about the Kotel, in honor of Yom Yerushalayim. So there's an interesting question. First of all, Where do we find in Chazal a significance to the Kotel? We all obviously attach a lot of significance, but where is it from? So there are a couple of midrashim that refer to the Kotel, and I'll read them to you there. They're quite fascinating. The first is Shmos Rabbah, Perek Beis. Amar of Achali, Olam Ena Shechina Zaza Mikosel HaMa'aravi, Shenamar, Hinei Ze Omeid Achar Koslenu. So the Shechina does not depart from the Kosel HaMa'aravi. In other words, it's a Makom HaShechina, and we'll talk about there might be halachic significance to this as well. As the Pasuk says, Hinei Ze Omer Achar Koslenu, this is of course a Pasuk from Shir HaShirim, Perek Beis, which refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, almost as it were, hiding behind the Kosel, and a reference or an allusion to the Kosel Ma'aravi. Likewise, it says in Bamidbar Rabba, Perek Yud Aleph, Amar Rav Yosi Rabbi Chanina, Leor Zila, De Ailisa, Hine Ze Omeid Achar Koslenu, Ze Kosel Ma'aravi Shal Beis HaMikdash, She'enu Chariv Li Olam, Lama, Sheshchina b'mara, an additional element that the Kosel Ma'aravi will never be destroyed because the Shechina is b'mairav. There's a very fascinating book by Rav Binyamin of Tudela. He lived from 1130 to 1173. It's called Masos Rabbi Binyamin, and he reports that the Jewish people at that time, so 900 years ago, were davening at the Kotel, based off of these sources. And he says, interestingly enough, it wasn't known there as the Kotel, but the Korin Oso Shar Harachamim. So that's what it used to be called, the Shar Harachamim, a reflection of, it's a place of tefillah, a place of rachamim, a place of Kabbalah's tefillah. So that being the case, there's a very interesting halachic shaila that I saw that Rav Nebenthal deals with, Rav Victor Nebenthal. And that's the following halacha. The Shulchan Aruch writes, this is in Siman Tzadi Dalet, Hayomed b'Yushalayim yachzir panav lemikdash, v'yachavein gamken keneged beis kochei hakadashim. So what does that mean? We all know that we daven facing Yerushalayim. Great. So when you're, and then it says, but what about if in your Yerushalayim? You're already in Yerushalayim, so what do you do? You don't face Yerushalayim, you're in Yerushalayim. So then the answer is, you're mechavein keneged beis kochei hakadashim. Or first, you're mechazer keneged hamikdash, and then if you could be more specific, you could follow mechazer keneged beis kochei hakadashim. So obviously that's not relevant for us, because if you're in New York, facing the mikdash and facing the kodesh hakadashim, Yerushalayim are all the same, we're so far away. But if you're actually in Yerushalayim, so then it's very relevant. And what about if you're davening at the Kotel? So seemingly, if you are davening at the Kotel, you should face not straight, like everybody does, but tilt to the left, right? You should sort of face, a 45-degree angle. I've never seen anyone do this. I remember when going on the Kotel tunnel tours, which are amazing, so you walk and walk and walk, and then they say, wow, guys, you're now Keneged Kodesh HaKadashim. And at least in the tour I went on, we stopped and we davened. Great! But that was like way far away. So I guess, maybe depending on where you're standing, at the Kotel, you have to do a slightly different angle. So why is it? Right? It seems to be against the Mefurash Halacha. The Mefurash Halacha says when you're in Yerushalayim, you should face the Kodesh HaKadashim. So Rav Nebenthal answers, based off of the Midrashim that we just said, that the Kotel is the Makom HaShechina, as we just saw. And it would be inappropriate to turn away from the Shechina, even to daven facing the Kodesh HaKadashim. This is the Makom HaShechina. So that Halacha is true anywhere else besides the Kotel. But since the Kotel is the Makom HaShechina, the Shechina is lo sharsam, a Kosel HaMa'aravi, its Shechina did not leave, did not depart the Kosel HaMa'aravi, Shechina b'Ma'arav. So therefore, when at the Kotel, you should say forward, at the Kotel, like the Minhag HaOlam, even though you're not facing Keneged Kodesh HaKadashim. Yes? I don't know of anyone who argues, but that doesn't mean that there's no one that argues. I've never seen anyone not, to do that. Even if you thought that in theory you should, you could argue that it's wrong to start facing in a different direction. Halacha is, you shouldn't really have two people in the same shul facing different directions, because A, it might lead to confusion, but even more problematically, it looks like you're davening, you know, like ki'ilu there's day reshuyos. So the answer is that you should follow, even if you didn't think this was the correct psak, I would still, in theory, think you should follow the minhag, and the minhag is to face forward. But as I said, I don't know of anyone that disagrees, though I'm not at all an expert on this topic. Yes?
I would kind of like a technical question. Uh-huh. So when we say, when Medrash Rabbah says that the Shechina is to the west of the Kotel, is that actually indicating...
No, maybe it means in the Beis HaMikdash, the Shechina was B'Ma'arav.
Oh, okay.
We don't face west, right? So
we're facing east.
Right.
So we're saying that the Shechina
is B'Ma'arav. It's the western
side.
Wall. There's actually an interesting discussion, but it's too late tonight to talk about what wall it is, which is not, though I think... There's a consensus of what it is, but it's not actually so pashut. But maybe for another time. Yeah, you had a... No? Okay.
Yeah. Oh. If you're facing even on an angle, you're still facing the Kotel.
Yeah, but you're not... You're also... But you're not fully facing it. If I you know, I am not facing you now, even though I'm sort of facing you, if I look up, right? I'm not facing you, I'm facing here. Yes and no. If you're speaking to a person and instead of facing them, you're at a 45 degree angle, that's like not so nice. They would say you don't have good eye contact and you're being a little rude. So I think that's the basis. Okay. Another interesting Kotel question, that comes up relates to the airspace above the Kotel. Not if you're flying in an airplane, no, that would be a shaila. You shouldn't fly in an airplane above the Makom HaMikdash. But, you know, there are Kohen shailas with cemeteries sometimes landing in Ben Gurion. I never heard of planes being redirected over the Makom HaMikdash. But a different issue which comes up, which is as follows. I remember when I was in eighth grade, I had never heard of this, we were going on a family trip to Eretz Yisrael, and my Rebbe told me that I shouldn't kiss the Kotel, and I shouldn't put notes into the Kotel. Why not? I think Donald Trump was at the Kotel today, put a note in. So why not? So the reason he told me was the following. A very interesting halacha, which I had not been aware of. I didn't know much in eighth grade. Still don't know much. But the Mishnah Pesachim says, min agaf lefnim kilefnim, min agaf lechutz kilchutz, hachalonos ve'ove achova choma kilefnim. This isn't talking about the Kotel, or the wall of the Har Bais per se, but it's a general halacha in terms of Kedusha. And it says that ovi hakosel, meaning to say the width of the wall is kilifnim, has the halachic status of lifnim, of that which is within it. So what's the relevance of that? Well, are you allowed to enter the Har HaBayis? So we're definitely not going to talk about the general discussion of entering Har HaBayis, Bezman HaZer, the like, but the answer is no, certainly not without doing certain things as a preparation. So assuming that I don't want to enter the Har HaBayis, so let's say I kiss the Kotel, well, that's entering Har Bais. Why? You'll say it's just the wall. Well, first of all, you know, it's been worn away over the years. But also, because the walls, Herodian building, as you might remember from your Kotel Tunnel tours, starts off thicker and, you know, gets a little thinner, 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 thinner. Still quite thick. And as you know, when you're at the Kotel, you're way above what you would have seen or touched when the Beis HaMikdash actually stood. So if I kiss the Kotel, I'm perhaps several inches into the Ovi HaChoma. And if you see that Ovi HaChoma is Kilifnim, so now I'm several inches into Lifnim. And if I like stuck a note into a crack, so then I'm going even further Lifnim. So that is why... my eighth grade Rebbe didn't say I'm not telling you, but he said you should know there are some poskim that say it's aser. There are some poskim that say it's aser. It's a big discussion in the poskim. We don't have time to go into it now. It's actually quite very interesting. Among others, there's a tshuva of the Avnei Nezer, who offers four reasons why you can stick your hands into the crevice, crevices of the kosel. So bottom line, as I said, there are different poskim, but Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that the minhag is to be lenient, even to stick your hands into the crevices, and he says that this is a very old minhag, because he quotes that the Or HaChaim, somebody once went to the Or HaChaim HaKadosh and asked him to daven, and or for a bracha of some sort, and the Or HaChaim HaKadosh wrote a note and stuck it into the crevices of the kotel. So it's a long minhag going back a long time to do this, and therefore the minhag is to be makel. So again, while here there are poskim that are machmir, I think the minhag olam is to be makel. Sorry?
What's the significance anyway? In my mind, like, why is that stronger than it's been?
That's a different question. I'm not talking about that now. I agree with that point. I personally don't do that, my feeling is that we should dive into Pat, but I don't, even if I don't understand it, there is a Gedolim did it, so there must be something to it. But it's definitely not a halacha. You don't have to write kfit lach and stick them into the kotel. And you're certainly correct that the ikar tefillah is tefillah bepeh and tefillah belev and the like. Yes?
I'm just wondering, if someone was mafid not to touch the kotel, they also not stand that close?
Yeah, I don't know. You have to ask an archaeologist. How close you can get. I don't know the answers to that question, but in theory, yes. Yes?
Two questions. One is, like, how long do you
think you knock everyone over in
your head? Yeah, that's a good question. It's a good question. Should you... So the answer is... do you walk out of a shul backwards? No, so I think that's the answer. The answer is that there is an inyan when sort of stepping away and leaving the presence to go backwards. And there are many holy people that do that when they're from the Aron, not necessarily the whole way. They don't walk backwards out of shul. And you definitely shouldn't, trip on people. And some people do it when they walk out of the shul, though not all the way out of the shul and the like. So if you wanted to do that, and it's a nice thing to do, definitely, so then I think you should do it when you're sort of taking leave. Now that's actually another interesting question, which I was going to talk about. We don't really have time tonight to talk about, which is an interesting shiloh. Does the plaza behind the kotel have the halachic status of the kotel or Beis HaKnesses? In other words, the kotel itself is definitely has Dinei Beis HaKnesses. What about the halachic, the plaza behind it? So why would you say yes? Because sometimes it's daven, an overflow crowds, people daven there several times a year, maybe at Birkas Kohanim and other special times. The kotel fills up with tens and thousands of people, and people daven at the plaza. But most of the time, the plaza isn't really a makom of tefillah. People want to daven at the kotel, go to the general area. So this could actually have some interesting halachic questions. Do you have to have the same COVID rosh that you'd have in the Beis HaKnesses in the plaza? Like schmoozing with friends, or kapandarya. You're not supposed to use the beis haknesses for shortcut. You know, what about sometimes like a quicker way to get from one part of the old city to the other is to like go from the Kotel Plaza and come around and would that be right? At least without stopping to learn or daven or something like that. And it's an interesting question. So similar point with your question, which is if you want to walk backwards when you're taking leave of the Kotel, so do you do it when you're leaving the tefillah place or really when you're leaving the plaza or both? I think my understanding, though, I didn't look into this so carefully, is that the consensus is that the plaza doesn't really have a din, even though sometimes we daven there as a makom of a beis haknesses and the like, so there's a little more room for leniency. So if that's the case, then maybe if you do want to walk backwards when taking leave of the Kotel, I would say do it when you're leaving the main area of tefillah and going into the plaza. Okay. If you want to do it again, if you want to, you know, walk onto the number one bus going backwards, I guess you could do that also. You know, there seem to be a lot of people going onto those buses a lot of times, so be careful who you step on. All right. I guess there's, and that also, by the way, is the psak of Nemensal. He thinks that it doesn't have the plaza, does not have the din of a beis haknesses, and we don't treat it like a beis haknesses. So he was makel on that shaila as well.
Can eat
there
also.
Sorry?
So a person then can theoretically eat.
Yeah, exactly. He says that's why you know, we only give out the yarmulkes when they go down to the whatever they give at the ladies section. I don't know, head coverings. So they only give it when you go into the main section, not when you enter the plaza. So you see that we don't treat that as the same kedusha. Yeah. Last question.
What about organizations that have started building the Mikdash? Like, is that?
Listen, if you want to learn about the halachos of Klei HaMikdash and building models and the like is something that's helpful, and also to show people and bring awareness and the like. I think that's a nice idea. I think that that probably is something that's valuable. It makes people sort of realize, first of all, learn what they were, what they looked like, and that these are real things, you know, to be ready when they come. The Chafetz Chaim writes about in his introduction to Likutei Halachos. People don't realize that he wrote a sefer on Kadshim as well, and he talked about the importance of learning Kadshim Halach Lamaisa, so that B'mheira Yibane Beis HaMikdash, and we'll know what to do. Day one, we have to get started. And the Chafetz Chaim, of course, of Kohen, so it was especially significant. Thought that it's very important to prepare in that way as well. It's very fascinating that there are numerous halachos that take for granted that a person has to act as though the Beis HaMikdash can be rebuilt at any time. At any time. And there's even an interesting halacha in Yerodeya about the Davar Sheish L'Matirin that reflects that halacha. And there's a discussion even whether the Kohanim are allowed to drink wine. Because, you know, if I have a cup of wine for lunch and then the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, you know, we have to make sure that we're ready for the Avoda. So I think to the extent that it's a reflection of that, it's a beautiful thing. We're out of time, so I'm going to even shorten my concluding remarks. But I think one of the things that I was thinking about in preparing these halachos was that I think that for many of us, when we first go to the Kotel or the like, it's a very moving experience. When we chair Kriya at the Makom HaMikdash, we feel very sad. And then we sort of get used to it and take it for granted. That's natural. But there's something about the avelos for the Beis HaMikdash which is unnatural. Usually when it comes to avelos, over time it decreases and decreases and decreases in intensity. The Chassam Sofer writes that the reason why we sort of lessen the avelos on Tisha B'Av as the time goes on is because we're comforted in the fact that we could still be misavel. Because only if we could be misavel is because we know it's going to be rebuilt. Otherwise, it would have long since been forgotten. We wouldn't still have those emotions. And I think, therefore, that especially on the day of Yom Yerushalayim, our avoda is, like we said, to have hakar satov for the nisim and the gifts. And to stop and think really how awesome it is what we have. And if we can, and it's harder, of course, from New York, but if we can be mechazik, the emotions that we should have about Yerushalayim, both about the incredible things that we have and also the things that we're missing. So then it could be a day which is really one of Aliyah and hopefully brings us closer to getting everything that we long for and we dream for. And we should see that day soon, b'mehera b'yameinu. Continue.